Hi, this is Justin Trudeau. You're listening to CFIU 93.3 Guelph Campus Radio.
I'm glad the really offensive stuff doesn't make it there.
Yes. Be one big beep.
Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, the co-host, and joining me is...
I'm Boop. Scotty Hertz here on the other host, and very happy to be here for our holiday series of shows.
The grand finale of the holiday trilogy. It's very exciting that the holidays are coming to an end.
It's
and it's
amazing.
The official start of year four.
Yes.
Official start
this
of year
four. This is our fourth birthday. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Open Sources. It's CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Now, today, it is time to give out some hardware. It is our annual, well, metaphorical hardware, I guess. It's our annual award show. Four categories, four opportunities for victory. And we'll start where we usually start, which is with the worst politician of the year. And this is a highly coveted trophy. And you may recall that last year, when certain people were elected to certain offices, we decided to give them the lifetime achievement, which thus removed them from contention.
Mm-hmm.
And so certain people will not be able to be allowed the list. But Scotty, plenty of other people to choose from.
Yes, absolutely.
Why don't you go ahead?
Shall I go first?
Yes.
Worst politician in my books, without a doubt, is U.S. senatorial candidate Roy Moore of Alabama.
Nice.
Pillar of the community. Stand-up guy.
If you can't do Trump, you can at least do more.
Exactly. Devout Christian man. And as Trump would say himself, loser. This guy, I think he's like the epitome of everything that's wrong with conservatism, neoconservatism, I guess, in the U.S. and the problems that beleaguer the Republican Party, American politics in general, the Trump regime. Yes to all of those. Tick all of the boxes.
I'll take five.
Oh, boy. No to all, right? So we've got this guy, Southern conservative. You remember the story because it wasn't that long ago. It was fairly fresh. And it came out as he was in the running for the job, which was to replace Jeff Sessions.
Jefferson Beauregard Sessions.
Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. That Moore, the good Moore is best known for putting a granite copy of the Ten Commandments on the lawn of the
good for
judiciary
him.
In Alabama, that he was doing some, let's say, unsavory things with young women, grooming them, mm-hmm. some of them really young.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, he lied about it. We're compressing this a lot because we have a lot to cover, but lies about it gets found out. And other things, too. There was this moment just before the election where his wife was defending his honor, and she did one of those, one of our lawyers is a Jew. How can you say that we don't like the Jews? We've got black friends. We've got Jewish friends. He also thought that the best of times in America was when slavery was in full swing. Wrong, wrong, wrong. So, and when it turned out that he had lost the election, he secretly felt that God was going to deliver a win, so he was just kind of holding out and holding out, even though the margin wasn't a huge margin that Doug Jones won by, a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
The fact we've got Democrats winning in Alabama, it's a bit of a repudiation of the whole thing, right? Steve Bannon was behind this guy and endorsed him. Steve Bannon, was Trump cabinet, I guess, or What was Bannon's official title?
He was the strategist, chief strategist.
With his two shirts.
on a hot day, two shirts.
And then, of course, Trump backtracked on Moore and was saying, oh, you know, I really wanted Lewis Strange.
Mm-hmm. He knew Moore was going to lose, which is why he endorsed him so handily.
Yeah, and then you had these high-rolling Republicans denouncing the guy from the onset. It was Mitch McConnell, Condoleezza Rice. It's like there was some names and not names saying that, you know, this is a really bad scene. So, you know, once that happens with all those things in place, there's no way the guy could win. But then again, they said the same thing about Trump. Oh, there's no way that guy's going to win, and he won. So I think this may be, even though it's, in my mind, the worst story and the worst politician, this may be a bit of a turning point for U.S. elections in general.
Yeah, one would hope. There were several special elections for the House and the Senate, and I think it was on one of the MSNBC shows, Matta or O'Donnell, they were showing like the election split or the percentage of how the percentage was changing, how back in earlier this year in the Montana race, one of the people in Trump's cabinet had the House seat from Montana, because I think they just have the one.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a victory by 5%, and then it went from 5 to 4, and then in the Georgia race was 2%, and then we come to Alabama and it's reversed, where the Democrat wins by 1.5, nearly 2%. So there's been a definite swing, and of course all these places where they were holding special elections is traditional Republican territory.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you see the graph sort of pull away from Republicans in Republican strongholds, you know there is something incredibly big going on on the other side, on the left-hand side. You know, in so much as Trump's election is a disaster, the upside, I think, it's that it smacked a lot of people in the back of the head and go, oh, I have to be involved. And I'll talk about this, and I'll talk about that a bit more in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing with Roy Moore is it's important to remember Roy Moore was an incredibly crappy candidate before the pedophile allegations.
Oh, yeah.
You know, going back to refusing to give people the gay, you know, LGBT people the right to vote after the Supreme Court ruled on it. That lost him his Supreme Court seat the second time. Mm-hmm. The Ten Commandments thing was the first time. Not only that, but his wife, who, you know, can't be racist or anti-Semitic because she has a Jewish lawyer, she was part of a nonprofit that where she made like six figures.
Yeah.
So, it you know, these people are like dirty from the word go.
Yeah, and
terrible people.
Absolutely, and of course there was the comedy break too, where he insisted on going to the polls on a horse.
Ugh.
And if you've seen it, the horse, I know we probably shouldn't go on about these minor points, but it just adds to this whole ridiculousness of this cowboy who probably isn't really a cowboy and riding this horse.
He's as much a cowboy as I am.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot of westerns too.
You're more of a cowboy.
I've seen a lot of westerns too. I want to get to my worst politician.
Yes.
And I gave it to a Canadian because they deserve no less. He is Kevin O'Leary.
Oh, Kevin O'Leary, yes.
Conservative leadership prospect. Mm-hmm. I don't think he was ever really a hopeful because he really half-assed his attempts. I mean, this is the man who said, you know what, I don't really think I need to move to Canada if I become the official opposition leader. I guess he was just going to lead the opposition from Boston or wherever.
Doesn't even need a seat. Just
doesn't need a seat.
Remote control leadership.
This thing runs itself. But yeah, he enters the race. First of all, he enters the race and he automatically gets a quarter of the support. Just by being Kevin O'Leary, loudmouth idiot on CBC and CTV and Shark Tank and all that. He starts dropping out of debates, and I think there was like financial penalties if he didn't show up to debates. Even the one I was at, which was an all English language one in downtown Toronto, he does not show up at. I think it was because it was his wife's birthday or something. Because I guess it snuck up on him. It was or his anniversary
penance,
or whatever.
Yeah.
But so he was like barely in this thing from the start. And then he, a couple of weeks before the leadership convention, he pulls out and says, oh, he sees no path to victory, even though he enters the race with 25% support, which is a heck of a lot more than Andrew Scheer had at the same time, who is now the actual Conservative Party leader. And then, you know, adding insult to injury, CBC's like, hey, if you're not doing anything for the leadership convention, why don't you come on and do some color commentary?
Yeah. That was difficult to watch. Yeah.
And I wanted to march down there and beat Peter Mansbridge. Are you kidding me? Kevin O'Leary, isn't it enough that we finally got him off the CBC? An organization he kind of hates, by the way, even though it gave him a paycheck for years.
Sure, it was a pretty sizable paycheck, too.
Oh, no doubt. But I mean, yeah, so Kevin O'Leary, and between I think my runner up was Doug Ford because he's back. But, you know, these are the guys who make politics, I feel, insufferable because they're not serious people.
No.
And Roy Moore fits into this mold to an extent because I saw somebody from Alabama talking on election night, the United States election night, a couple of weeks ago, saying, you know what? Roy Moore wasn't going to go to the Senate to do anything. He was going to go to the Senate to sit there and grouse and obstruct and talk about how the government isn't godly enough and how we need more prayer in schools or whatever the hell. And Kevin O'Leary's like that too, and Doug Ford's like that. Doug Ford knows that he hates everything John Tory is doing, and he's running again purely out of spite. And you know, so get these guys out of politics. Stop giving these guys support. If you're a conservative, that's fine. We can have a debate about conservative principles and conservative ideas, but Kevin O'Leary isn't in this for any principle other than Kevin O'Leary needs attention. Doug Ford's not in this for any principle other than Doug Ford needs attention. Same with Roy Moore. Same with Donald Trump. This isn't about them. This isn't about conservative principle.
Yeah, the conservatives really need to up their game. I mean, I may be particularly hard on them or whatever, but it's reflected in all of this, and that, I mean, there was a time you would say, you know, conservative whatever. It's a different, I've referred to it in the past as neoconservative, where there's this new mold that they fit into that has to tick all the boxes, whether it's, you know, reality TV or some kind of TV star. O'Leary falls into that as well as Trump, among others. Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, I think that's why O'Leary thought he was like the Canada Trump. I did a reality show. I was a businessman. I can do government. I can do it from Boston. Why not? I don't have to learn French. What good is French?
Yeah. And the heavy biblical basis on everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, at times demonizing certain communities.
Yeah.
I'd say that about, say, Jason Kenney, also a winner of sorts this year.
Well.
But he you know, under Harper, he was encouraging the different communities in Canada of new Canadians, but there's still the faith question, I think, kind of clobbers a lot of what they try to do because it becomes this overarching. It's the same with Scheer. There's these certain 10 precepts or whatever.
But they show up.
Yeah,
it's the point. Jason Kenney, you know, moved back to Alberta, and he didn't take a job at a Toronto law firm and then ran for leadership. And he had to run for leadership twice.
He's from Oakville, by the way, folks. There's no Albertan.
Well,
not unlike,
everybody's from somewhere.
Not unlike Harper.
But, you know.
Cowboys.
But you have to have, you have to put in the ground game. You can't do this from afar.
And that's what O'Leary didn't do.
That's exactly
all.
What he didn't do. He thought
was
he could waltz in.
Was he even card carrying until he.
I highly doubt he's ever been a member of any political party because he's a business, like Trump.
Yeah.
Trump's given to everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think O'Leary is probably the same thing. He's probably given to whoever has the best chance of winning.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't. I think the idea of him becoming conservative leader was so outlandish, in so much as Trump becoming the Republican nominee was outlandish for a time, that I don't think anyone really kind of dug into what his intent were or what he, you know, where he's put his money in the past.
Partying with the Clintons.
But I mean, there were, and this isn't about him being a businessman either. We had Peterson on the show.
Yes.
And he was a serious, I mean, he was a businessman, but he was also a serious candidate.
Mm-hmm. He seemed to be, yeah.
And with serious conservative ideas. And
how he called us guys.
And also, guys. He called all the way from Vancouver to be on our show. So he was willing to talk to the lefty wackos.
Reputed. Repudiate.
All right. Let's
reputation
move on to
just shot.
I don't.
We
think
take it, all comers. You want to call left, right, center? Just call us.
I don't think it was a secret. Anyway.
No.
So that leads into the what I think is the best news story of the year, and I will start with mine, which is the Resistance. So yeah, we had Doug Jones in Alabama, which is a huge. I mean, even though the margin was slim, it's still a huge victory to go from 97% for JB to JB Sessions to the 49.5 for Doug Jones. But I mean, let's not forget, we just had in recent weeks the announcement that Virginia legislature is 50-50. Mm-hmm. Which is taking back from the Republicans. You have Danica Rome, first transgender lawmaker in the United States. You have Vi Lyles, who is the first black female mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina. You have Wilmot Collins, a Liberian-born refugee, now the mayor of Helena, Montana. Again, that's deep red country, red meaning Republicans. You have Ravinda Bella, who is the Sikh mayor of Hoboken. Hoboken, no joking. You have Elizabeth Guzman, who was the first Latina elected in Virginia. You had Chris Hearse, who was an anti-gun advocate elected in Virginia. His fiance was famously or infamously murdered on air by a crazy person with a gun. You have the first female mayor in Seattle in 90 years in Jenny Durkin. The list kind of goes on and on. You had, you know, this ballot measure in Maine pass. Where it insists on Medicare expansion for everyone, which is going to be especially poignant when Susan Collins goes home, having voted for the tax bill, and that destroys the individual mandate, which is how the Affordable Care Act runs. So, it was a pretty good year overall for the resistance, for the, you know, people who are, you know, on the left side.
La résistance.
On the left side of things, let's say. It's especially poignant in these places like Oklahoma, where all four of the state special elections this year have gone to Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
So there is definitely a change coming. Emily's List, which is a organization that raises funds for female candidates, has noticed 3 times the number of women approach them for help fundraising. The number of people who have run first time or have run or signed up to run as Democrats is about 5 or 6 times the number of people who've signed up so far to run as Republicans next year. And you have a lot of scientists running. A lot of scientists who are sick of the anti-science BS and are sick of the climate denial and all this, who are, you know, deciding to roll up their sleeves and get into politics to sort of set the record straight on these important science-related issues and get people like Jim Inhofe out of the Senate, who brings in snowballs to prove global climate change is
I got
incorrect.
Some snow here. All of those things that you listed, that was a pretty amazing set of elections there where you say globally, you're given this impression with of America with Trump on down, and yet at other levels, there's all of that going on where things so many firsts, as you said, transgender people, Sikh guy. So for all this negativity that's happening in terms of, you know, the vilifying and kind of xenophobic approach to immigrants and build the wall and all that crap, in my view, obviously in lots of people's view, and yet somehow there's these little rays of hope popping up, saying that, you know, you don't have to necessarily be. There's like a couple of socialists elected too. Like you can say the S word again. It's not, you know, on a city council or something. Seattle famously, Shama Sawant is like still in. So you know, given the impression, oh, there's godless communists, and yet they're electing godless socialist types and whatever.
Well, and it's the local elections where that's what Democrats have sort of forgotten about. It's been all about the national races the last few years, and they forgot about the local races where things like gerrymandering happens, where things like
it's ridiculous.
You know, the lower court judicial appointments happen, where people rise up to become later appointed to federal court. So I think what Jefferson Beauregard Sessions, J.B. Sessions, as I like to call him, he ran unopposed in 2014, the last time there was his seat was up for election.
That won't happen now.
That's why he won 97%. He won unopposed. So many of these Virginia seats Republicans were running unopposed, and that can't happen anymore. And I think that's the lesson the resistance has learned. You have to fight them on the beaches and fight them on the landing grounds. And
share all the Saturday Night Live sketches that feature Jeff Sessions, because it's just played by a woman. I'm sure that rankles somewhat, but she does a good job.
Kay McKinnon is
a star.
Anyway, your best news story.
My best news story, A New Hope, is $15 minimum wage in Ontario.
Oh, yeah.
So some CanCon here. So it will be $14 as of January 1st and $15 January 1st, 2019. There was a report came out called The Changing Workplaces Review that made 173 recommendations total, I think it was, on helping precarious work and workers. And out of that came the suggestion that the minimum wage should rise. The Liberals are running with that. I know there's been some cynicism as to, well, there's an election coming up, so they're going to throw all kinds of goodies at the province. But in my opinion, it's about time this happened. Actually, it's one of the first times where I've been on a march and went and yelled at Queen's Park on a Saturday when there's no one there for 15 in fairness. I'm not there. I did my small, minuscule part in this, but there were quite a few people there. There's been a very strong movement for a very long time that wages need to rise, specifically not just province-wide, but getting into specific places like Toronto, where it is difficult to make a living, and in major centers, sorry, not to make a living necessarily, but to pay your rent and groceries and all those things to exist, it needed to happen. Now, the critics are like, oh, it's too fast and it's too much and, oh, there's an election coming. That's the only reason they're doing it. And you can bet like everything that closes over the next 2 years, it's already happened. A couple of restaurants have packed it in. They're like, I can't afford to pay the minimum wage. It's like, it hasn't actually happened yet. So, you know, it's not going up for a little bit yet. So your business was probably already kind of on the rocks. I'm sure there'll be everything under the sun, and it'll be interesting to see what happens at Loblaws. Maybe they'll, you know, re-launder some of that bread money for the. I suppose that's another story. But yeah, I think it's great that this is finally happening. And even if the Liberals get the boots in June, if they get kicked out, I think it's unlikely this will stop. I think I read one report that the Conservatives were actually behind this. I think if they did anything to slow it, it would be, well, let's put the brakes on at 14. They could potentially do. But
they could do that, yeah.
And it would still be, you know, obviously higher than it is now. But to me, this is something that was probably long overdue and lots of people. So,
well, I mean, if the thing of it is, if the $14 minimum wage happens and we see actually more economic activity, it benefits everyone.
Yeah.
And that's how it's happened in other places that have passed $15 minimum wage, is that they haven't seen a loss of businesses. They've seen an increase in economic activity. The increase hasn't shut down a huge percentage of businesses. And I think you're right. If you're shutting down because the minimum wage is going from $11.60 to $14, there's probably other factors hanging on your business. I mean, restaurants are tricky businesses anyway.
It's like the worst business to start and run and keep it going. Look at Meltwich, not to name names, but they're done. Bankrupt, 6 months in town here.
Yeah.
Right? So it's hard. But, you know, there's lots out there still. And, you know, it's the kind of thing a lot of people are probably, you know, if they have to raise, you know, the price of the sandwich a little bit and then this and that a little bit. But there was a very good comment on a documentary about this where there was a woman who worked a drive-through window, and this was in the States, who was somebody else advocating for wages to go up, and she said, I see how much money comes through that drive-through window every day. You know, it's ridiculous for them to argue that for the difference of a dollar or 50 cents or whatever it is that can't happen, especially when it's something corporate. Corporations with billions. Speaking specifically of fast food, but that extends to places.
Walmart.
Yeah, Walmart. Can't really use Sears as an example.
Sears, if they're not, we're obviously recording this in advance, so if Sears isn't closed by now.
Yeah.
But I think you sort of swept aside the bread thing a little quickly there because, of course, who has been one of the major voices against this? Galen Weston.
Oh, yeah.
And Galen Weston has been ripping people off for bread for years. So
we're just going to put more self-checkouts. You know, they're going to be less cashiers and...
You know, it's funny, though.
We can't afford it. The billionaires can't afford it.
Shoppers Drug Mart, a subsidiary of Loblaw. The one near my house, I always use the self-checkout because there's always a line at the main cashier.
Yeah.
And I think it's because old people can't make the...
But it's also the cashier, as you say. There isn't two or three.
Right, the cashier. But that. But I'm
There'll
the
be
one...
all these empty
But I'm the only one using one of the three open and available...
Auto-checkout.
Auto-checkout.
Yeah, that'll change.
Well, maybe. But, I mean, at the same time, though, Galen Weston has been like, oh, this is going to kill our business. I'm going to have to get more. It's like, well, maybe some of that bread money you've been ripping off for years will, you know, trickle.
Are you going to apply
maybe
for
that'll
the,
trickle down, Galen.
Are you going to apply for the $25 gift certificate?
No.
It's probably going to cost $24 to get it or something.
I, you know what? Galen Weston having to come out and apologize for his BS is priceless enough that I don't need the gift certificate. That's fine.
I want to do it just on the principle of the thing, but
yeah, I hear you on that.
Then they put you on some list.
No doubt you'll probably start getting spammed up the wazoo because of it. So no thanks.
President's choice, everything.
I just seeing Galen Weston contrite for a change that I enjoyed. That I will take with me forever. So no thank you.
So congratulations, minimum wage earners out there. As of now you're probably making more, and in a year you'll be making even more. I hope it stays. I hope it sticks.
And to respond to your point about the cynicism of the Ontario government, who cares?
Well, exactly. If they're going to give you something good and beneficial, you have to take it.
Yeah, they're doing it.
You will take the deal.
Yeah, they're doing it.
You can say, no, don't give me more money.
But who cares? I mean, cynical reasons are about the only reason a lot of governments do anything. And, you know, it's electioneering, but you know what? Take the positive. Because if they weren't having an uphill climb to re-election next year, they probably wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the thinking in Camp Wynne was probably that, you know, balanced books were enough. But I mean, that seems, given other general reports and other independent things, that seems kind of dubious. So they need something to say, hey, you know, keep us around. And if that is paying minimum wage earners a bit more, then you know what, take it, because otherwise it probably wouldn't have happened.
I'm wondering what the other recommendations are. I'm going to try and pick it apart to find the report, the Changing Workplaces Review. 173, I mean, of which raising the minimum wage is one. I don't know what the other ones are, but should be an interesting report.
Yeah, and to speak to your point, because I have a friend who makes a pretty good living as a film editor and doing VFX and things like that, and he's been looking for some place in Toronto because, I mean, that's where the work is.
Yeah.
And he still lives in Guelph because he has such a hard time finding some place affordable but not crappy.
Yeah, there's nothing under a grand. That's
so, I mean,
yeah.
This is the world we live in, but you know, housing is a whole other issue. Anyway, we're going to take a break there, and we will come back in a second with our other negative and other positive award. We'll explain more about that in a minute, but since we're going to get into the negative next, we'll try to keep it upbeat with this musical selection here, and I think it really needs no introduction. And we'll play that for you and then come right back. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Hi, this is Justin Trudeau. You're listening to CFIU 93.3 Guelph Campus Radio.
So, of course, that song needed no introduction, the Sesame Street theme on album brand new to the station called Kalamazoo from Delafeo Marsayas, one of the Marsayas brothers. There are loads of them. They're all massively talented. Are they all brothers or cousins? And they've all got the last name. So put a horn in their hand and they'll make it sing. So
what's the name of the album?
An Evening With, Delafeo Marsalis. Kalamazoo. I don't know if it's in Kalamazoo or Kalamazoo, the song's on there. Blue Kalamazoo. Yes. Anyway, check it out. It's on Troubadour Jazz Records.
Check it out. Excellent. So back to the awards. And because we have a very typical name for this, but because of there was a fairly unfortunate incident in Washington State a couple of weeks back, we changed the name. So this year we're calling it the Dumpster Wreck, of the year. And fans of the old ballot box should enjoy that. But yeah, the Dumpster Wreck of the year, my choice for Dumpster Wreck of the year is local news. Now, you may recall that one of my best news story last year was the renaissance of news following Trump, and then, you know, going to places like New York Times, Washington Post, and people, you know, giving more to the media there, buying subscriptions and such. But I think in that process, we've forgotten about our local news. I mean, this year I've kind of gotten a bit fed up with people, you know, Dick Mercury's gone. It's like, yeah, it's gone. What are we going to do now? And that seems to be where the conversation ends, where people are like, oh, the Guelph Mercury's gone. But I have yet to hear anybody go, you know, okay, so now what do we do? Or I have very few people to say, now what do we do? I want to focus, though, explicitly on our local TV news, which comes from CTV in Kitchener. Mm. They need to try harder. They really, really need to try harder. And I realize a lot of this is corporate. They cut the local sports earlier this year. And in fact, all CTV stations, including the one in Toronto, will have no more local sports by the end of the year.
So does that mean no one cares about sports at all ever now? No.
Well, that's what's interesting is that I think it was back in April. But, you know, instead of the three people where you had to anchor the weather person and the sports person, there was just the two people, the anchor and the weather person. It's just like, well, where's the sports person? Are they on vacation? Is every sports person on vacation? And they didn't, like, they drew no attention to it at all, which was just bizarre. But local sports was gone. And then this fall, they introduced a news at 5, which I thought, okay, so they're reinvesting into some kind of news entity. And I was very much eager to see it. And what do I get?
Oh,
I get this schlocky, just showcase of dreck of like local ephemera and bric-a-brac and what's going on the internet. And here's some funny videos we found on the internet. Here's like us going to like the spa or the Princess Cinema to talk about, isn't it awesome that we have these things in KW? And one of the anchors, Mark Venema, he seems to be like doing some sort of Mission Impossible-esque thing where he's like playing dress-up fighter jock one day. And then another day he's like running scrimmages with the Laurier football team, or he's, you know, pretending to be mayor of Brant or whatever the hell. And it's just like, am I watching the news to get information? Am I watching you play Mr. Dress-Up? Is this a Mr. Dress-Up audition, Mark Venema? I don't know. And whose idea was this? They have an hour of news. They can do, like, and they don't have to do the format of the 6 o'clock news, which is bam, 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 here's your information. Mm-hmm. They could do sit-downs for 20 minutes. They represent an area where there's like a dozen different mayors from a dozen different places, including four big cities with over 100,000 people. They can stop and do these information-driven interviews, these sit-down, these free-flowing discussions with MPs, MPPs, mayors, city councilors, people from aid agencies. Forget your toy mountain for a minute. Let's talk about actual poverty in the city of Kitchener and Waterloo or Cambridge or Guelph, for that matter, or general poverty issues. You can do this. You have created a whole extra hour of news, but you're giving me the same old crap. I don't care about gadgets. There are a million places on the internet I can go to learn about gadgets. Don't show me that fat guy from before the movies who's always talking about gadgets. I don't care about him. He's a freelance gadget meister. I don't care. Cocktail recipes for like making the perfect Caesar. I don't care. I hate Clamato. Stop inflicting this on me. And it's just, there seems to be, so far as TV news is concerned, their viewers are, and this isn't, and I realize a lot of this is driven by advertising because you want these people, but these aren't the people watching your TV news. Upper middle class, people who work 9 to 5, people who have holidays off, people who have weekends off. These aren't universally your customers. You're not appealing to people who want news by, you know, saying like, what's the best way to talk, you know, how do you battle holiday stress? And it's like, you know what? You battle holiday stress? Maybe not having people work two jobs to make ends meet so they can buy their kid one thing on Christmas morning and then depend on Toy Mountain for the rest.
Can you people just give Donaldson a show, like his own show? Because he'd just make it, you just pay him whatever, and just give him the mic and let him go, because it's quite obvious that a nerve has been touched.
A nerve has been struck.
And I sympathize with this, too. Now, I think I talked about it on a previous show that how we completely cut off satellite, not this sort of Luddite.
Yeah, you cord stuff. Cut, which, you know,
cord
doesn't
cut,
help.
But, of them, course, yeah. Doesn't help. Cut the cord and then relying on this beautiful high-definition signal coming from, you can do this, people in this town,
from
CTV. So it's back to the future in terms of, like, before we even had cable and they got rid of analog.
Yeah.
We watched the CTV news, and it was the news. Like, when I was a student here, they even had, like, a farm report. They didn't have that now, let alone Dave Emery. I don't know if he's still there. I doubt it. They're all gone.
No, he's retired. He's retired last year.
Bless him, because, you know, he probably wouldn't want to be in this mess that they have now. And I see what they've done. I mean, they've taken that one little sort of fun piece that they used to do, and they all do it. I was referred to it as the puppy story at the end, which became, let's show something off of YouTube, which you've probably seen anyway and don't need to see. It is pretty much filler. It's just all filler.
You have Facebook, you've seen it.
And that's the thing, and it's nice to be out in the community and have them doing this stuff. And to touch on print media just for a minute, too, I mean, the trib comes. Whoever delivers ours, they just lob it under the car. So I got to get the broom out to fish it out from under the car. Not that I, you know, it's like, but are you doing this on purpose or just? And, of course, when you read it, you've already seen it online. I know that's another story, and I totally get what you're saying about TV news, and I think CBC Toronto local news has gone that way too, which I do watch on occasion because I quite like Dwight and company, but it's the same thing. It's just Dwight and the weather person, and then that's about it. Now, what they do is they kind of steal stories from the National and that, things that are in the can that are from Toronto, chop them up a little bit. Obviously, CTV Kitchener doesn't have that capacity, right?
Well, they have the access to the national media,
yeah,
and affiliates and things, but
and show a they'll probably show a national filler story as well. But what does it tell us about KW or Guelph for that matter? Because they do this reach into Guelph, but it has to be a really massive story, I think, of which we don't really have lots and lots of. But
well, I mean,
you know, beyond the car crashes, it's
but it's
like
a lick and a promise. Like they had a videographer at the budget, the main budget vote.
Yeah.
And then they had a videographer at the Electra merger vote.
Yeah.
But they didn't have a full reporter. They talked to Tara Baker, the treasurer.
I was on this one of the community meetings I have at the Hydro. I spoke at length, but it got chopped. They
cut Scotty Hurst.
They cut me. No, and it's not, you know, I was supposed to be personal on the street, which in this instance I was, but they spoke to me, they spoke to other people, they spoke to the head of Hydro, they spoke to Cam. They only showed Cam.
Scotty was left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, and they had a ton of, I mean, it wouldn't matter if it was me or person X, but if you want that sort of word on the street, not, they had way more coverage of the Santa Claus parade and what kids thought of the floats.
Yeah,
then because I know when, I hate to say it, when a bunch of kids come on, I just kind of tune out because it's the same. I know they're going to say, yeah, I'm really happy to see Santa. I know.
And it's important. Puff pieces are important because otherwise it's all depressed.
But if you got an hour of puff, you know, that's like, where's the meat, what you're talking about?
Right, but it's not just like they had an hour of puff. Now they've had an hour of puff. And it's, you know, what's the point?
I guess it's free puff for me now, but
free
still.
Free puff.
Not Stay Puff, but free puff.
I think we run over time on my dumpster wreck.
It's okay. Mine, I will speak quickly, I guess. My dumpster wreck is the Phoenix Pay System.
Yes.
Phoenix Pay System, supposed to have been an improvement, launched in April 2016.
That's funny.
Plagued with problems from the start. The ultimate cost to fix it is, I mean, it's supposed to save money, but the ultimate price may be $1 billion for this so-called off-the-shelf cost-saving system. The history of it was initiated in 2011 by the Conservative government for the reasons I specified. It's off the shelf. And the main thing was like we can centralize payroll. I think it was supposed to be in the Miramichi. That way sort of lay off all the payroll people who are doing this and that everywhere across the country. Well, it didn't work because civil servants being overpaid, underpaid, not paid. There's 300,000 people on the federal civil service payroll, myriad departments and agencies. And I think the overall attempt was to save $700 million. Well,
yeah.
There's no savings in this.
Yeah.
Still not fixed. 1,000 glitches supposedly in the software. PeopleSoft. And people said, it sounds like something out of movies. PeopleSoft. This is a shambles. Shambolic dumpster wreck. It's everything that's wrong with kind of bureaucratic centralized things. Where it's like, oh, we'll just do this. Oh, it'll be fine. And meanwhile, some of the workers, you know, yeah, you probably proceed with a bit of caution. No. So now they've got, I guess it's affected 80,000 people to some degree. Some no pay at all, some too much. And specifically people who are, if there's something not unusual, but, you know, they're on disability or on mat leave or something that isn't just a normal paycheck, that seems to be the area of where things are screwed up. So I sympathize with all the civil servants who are, you know, getting paid too much or not. I think you get paid too much, there's some kind of penalty and you've done nothing.
Yeah.
Except have a job with the feds. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take to fix it, but they're not doing a good job.
No, it's one of these bizarre things where, you know, can't they in the meantime just go back to, I mean, maybe not writing checks by hand. Those are a lot of checks. But, you know, I understand the automation thing about it isn't working. But can't you just, you know, instead of, well, shut this thing down, fix it, go back to the old way, and then, or, you know, I don't know what, I honestly don't know enough about the whole system, but maybe someone's asked this question, it's been answered, why they can't just go back to the old way until this is fixed.
Well, I think they've had to do that. It sounds like they've actually had to hire people to do the patch job on this.
Yeah.
And do, as you say, maybe even a manual version of this. I worked at a company where they did this. It was actually, believe it or not, upgrading to Windows 95 from their old system. That's how long ago it was. The thing crashed. It was down for a week. They lost thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of dollars. When this happens, it's in business at least, it's serious.
Yeah.
Somehow when it happens at this level, it's just like, well, and of course I've heard, well, it wasn't us. It was the conservatives. It wasn't. It doesn't matter who it is.
It doesn't matter at this point. It doesn't. That's 2 years ago.
Whoever can fix this will be golden. It looks like it's not the liberals. It's not the, I don't know if you can specifically just blame the government that came in. I don't think you can. There's a lot more going on. But there's lots of systems worldwide where people get payroll and there's no problems. It's very basic, whether in business or in government or whatever, that people have to get paid what they're entitled to, get the benefits that they're entitled to. It sounds relatively straightforward. So as to why it is such a shambles.
Well, yeah, it's a shambles part. Everybody understands this to a degree, because I think almost everybody now does, when they get paid, when they're working, they get paid, they get the direct deposit.
No, there's no check.
Yeah. So
it's, exceptions get checks.
Exceptions or places that have high turnover. Mm-hmm. But everybody knows this is like an easy thing. It just, you know, it shows up on, you know, on Thursday or on Friday in your bank account and away you go. So, you know, what's the problem here? And I think that's where there's frustration. But, I mean, you're right. It was the conservatives initiated it, but you can't go around saying it's the last government's fault 2 years later. If it's not fixed after 2 years, it's not their fault anymore. Maybe it's their fault for not putting full faith and credit in getting the system started to begin with. But if you can't fix it after 2 years, you own it, unfortunately.
It's become your responsibility, as does everything that's handed over with the keys.
Exactly.
To Parliament Hill. So
precisely. Well, let's get done the awards segment. We're going to go with the last category, best politician. Who is your best politician?
My best politician is Carmen Cruz, mayor of San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Nice.
Of the Popular Democratic Party, which is slightly different. I think they sort of align themselves with the Democrats.
They're Democrat adjacent.
They're Democrat-like. So anyway, Mayor Carmen Cruz, we spoke about her at the time. She sprang into action when Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of it was middle of September, 20th of September?
Yes. Like only yesterday.
She kind of led the charge and still is leading the charge, or trying to, on Washington to get help. and became subject to attacks from Trump and the Trump administration. Trump, who didn't even seem to realize that Puerto Rico was part of the U.S. at one point, was kind of like, oh, that's not us.
He talked to the president of the Virgin Islands, too.
He just knows that Puerto Rico's a bit of an economic basket case, and that's all he's concerned about. It's like, well, they blew that, so there's no way they're going to be able to fix anything. And this is an example of you know, let's call them the Naomi Klein theories becoming true. You've got disaster capitalism, the immediately desire to privatize the power grid. The grid's not even back up yet. I read earlier this month, I guess, that they're only up at like 64%. And this is like 3 months later.
Yeah.
It might be marginally more than that in airtime that the power is back, but... and things, I think the company's called Floor Corp, Floor as in fluorescent light, have been given the contract, and it just keeps ballooning. It's up to like $500 million. Still no power for everybody. Then there was another one that was canceled. And these are the kind of things that Cruz is, you know, speaking out about loudly with the bullhorn. And I think there was that one scene with her, she's trying to guide people out of a flooded area. I think it was a senior's home.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, given the orders.
In the hip waders and everything.
Yep. And you're not obligated. You know, can you see Trump doing something like that? Trump, of course, went and famously lobbed the paper towels. That was his contribution. Use this to mop it up. I don't know.
He also famously went to one of the least affected areas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dry feet, right?
Yeah.
So she was famously critical of his, you know, the administration and the response to it. And of course, that's when he attacked, and then this back and forth. And that's how she got her name. In some ways, it was a good thing because she was on all of the news.
Yeah.
And seemed like a voice of reason in the midst of everything that was going on, and just trying, you know, please help us. It was quite sad at times. It would seem, too, she's been tapped as a bit of a contender for governor. She would probably get the gig, I would think, after that. You never know, though. We don't, I, you know, obviously politics is not perfect anywhere where we wouldn't exist, but she's going to run for that. And Puerto Rico not only needs help to recover from the disaster, but, you know, as I'd said, economically, there are problems. So that story in itself isn't a good news story, but the fact that somebody, you know, did their job and rose up again against the bureaucracy and the inefficiency and said, look, and took a stand. And to that, she's to be commended, I believe.
Yeah, that was a time Puerto Rico needed a strong voice to speak in Puerto Rico's interest, and she sort of became it. And it was quite organic as well. There was never a sense that anything was political behind it. The political culture kind of found her, and she was just doing her job. My best politician also comes from away. It is Jeremy Corbyn.
Oh, there you go.
The leader of the official opposition in Britain, leader of the Labour Party. I was thinking back this year, and it's always tough to decide on the best politician. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking back to watching election night in the UK on the BBC, and I sort of just checked in to see what was going on, but then it stayed on the BBC all night. Watching this incredible story of hubris, it was almost biblical because, of course, Theresa May calls an election thinking she's going to have a bigger majority so she can negotiate Brexit from a strong position. The polls backed up that assumption. I think it was 25% she led over Corbyn in some of those polls. And then we get to election night, and it's a disaster for the Conservatives. It's just an unmitigated disaster. And yet, the Labour took maybe 5 or 6 seats from SNP, but they took almost 30 seats from the Conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Conservatives end up in a weaker position going into Brexit negotiations. All those people who thought Corbyn was yesterday's news, thought it was a joke he was Labour leader, were shocked. It caught everybody by surprise that he was such a force. And if the Conservatives ultimately finished with 317 in a minority situation, Labour has 262. And this was, of course, a couple of months after he lost a by-election.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't even have a seat at the time. And so this leaves the conservatives in a weak position. They end up having to team up with this odious Irish party called the Democratic Unionist Party, who are anti-immigrant, far-right, anti-LGBT. And, of course, you know, the chips are falling where they may. It seems that they're on course with, I think, the phase two of Brexit now. They seem to have sorted out some of the things at first. But by all means, this was a disaster for Theresa May. Epic victory for, even though Jeremy Corbyn didn't win, everyone thought he was down and out, that it was a joke, that he was a Labour leader. Again, no joke. And that is an amazing political story as any other.
Yeah, and I think when this, they're in hung parliament situation right now, and I think when it does fall, because I think that the shaky part of the coalition or the supply and, what's that called again, supply and, let's say supply management, but it's a loose coalition. It's not a proper coalition government, with the DUP being bought with about $1 billion worth of promises. And funny enough, it is the Irish border that's one of the key points with the Brexit, the border within Ireland, between Northern Ireland, which belongs to the UK, and Ireland, which is Ireland. It seems there's going to be some sort of special arrangement there. All of that aside, we're supposed to be talking about Corbyn, and Corbyn not only took seats from the Conservatives, but also from the Scottish National Party, which added to that, as you said, amazing seat total they had. And I do think when this government does fall, and it will, they've got a really serious chance at it, because Corbyn has proven that he's a contender. He's not, I mean, he's definitely a lefty comparatively, but he's not this unknown. I mean, he's been a parliamentarian for a lot, at least 30 more years, right? So he's
at least,
he's, you know, rain or shine, New Labour, Conservative governments, he's been there. I don't think he's the beauty of it. In a lot of ways, he's aligned with Sanders, Bernie Sanders, in that never wavered from the beliefs. When it was the era of New Labour, he was a backbencher and he was like,
Proud of it.
And they did have people. Tony Benn is another where they were like, I can't believe I'm in the middle of this, but I'm still Labour. And never, you know, gave up on the ideals that people elected them on. And now that he's got the top job, I think we will probably see a Labour government. It may be a minority situation as well, but
it'll be easier for him to form an alliance, though.
Let's see, a Labour SNP would be a possibility. I guess there's plenty of combinations, but yeah, you're right. I mean, he was written off, and a lot of that's due to the press too. I mean, the
Absolutely.
Press, you know, the Sun, you name it, it's like, oh, Corbyn, the loony left, as they say in the UK, and never mind loony left, loony right, my goodness.
Well, that's a good
Boris
place.
Johnson and all those. Yeah, we could talk about a whole show about that.
That's a good place to segue, because we have our words to retire this year. And mine is fake news, because I mean, if there's a tool of the right now, fake news started as this thing to describe the mills in Russia and other places that are just cranking out like supposedly journalistic endeavors that just were anything but. But now it's become like any news you don't like. If you don't like it, it's fake news. You're accused of molesting, you know, teenage girls when you were 30. Fake news.
You're fake news. There
yeah,
you go.
Exactly.
Mine is synergy or synergies.
Nice.
If I have to sit through another presentation where somebody just keeps saying synergies, which says to me that they didn't do the homework or they're just saying stuff. I think the record that I sat through, and this is a few years ago, was nine times somebody said in a 5-minute presentation, it's like, you didn't do the work. You're fake news.
Amazing.
So, yes, synergies, just stop it. Get the thesaurus, get the Urban Dictionary. I don't care what you got to do. Find a new word.
Maybe not get the Urban Dictionary.
No.
If
it probably means something totally different.
If it's a professional presentation, maybe don't Google Urban Dictionary.
If you're street.
Just like if you're doing a professional presentation from your laptop and you're using PowerPoint, close the porn windows first.
Oh, I've seen that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, it's an assumption that everybody does it, but you don't have to prove it, is what I'm saying. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
That's a hot tech tip for you.
That's a hot tech tip from...
That's one to
the
grow
hot
on.
Tech tip. I don't think...
For Kids World, I'm Scotty Hertz. No,
I don't think they do one to grow on anymore, which is a shame.
We should start.
We should bring it back.
You know that synergies...
Knowing it's half the battle, that should come back to you. Anyway. A lot of great life lessons from G.I. Joe. Anyway, as for us, speaking of life lessons, we'll be like back to normal next week with our regular shows. We're going to try and get some guests in, and we'll have Christmas break to start planning that stuff. And Yeah, because this isn't live. I think that was fairly established up front. So we're currently still recovering from New Year's. I'm sure it was a great party at the open sources office.
Sitting, listening to this with a hot pack on my head or a cool pack. Going,
or a cool pack.
We sound so, you know.
We sound so
like
live.
We know what we're doing.
Yeah, that's a big stretch. Anyway. So, yeah, I mean, there's two big elections this year. We've talked about this before. You know, we've got provincial. And, of course, it's an open race in Guelph, too. So that's going to be interesting. We've got the municipal election, which will be, that'll be interesting, multifaceted. We'll see who comes up in that short nomination period then. This year, 3 months to decide whether you're in or out, people. So just so you know.
Chop, chop.
Chop, chop. Starting May 1st.
And you're all invited, by the way. We extend an open invitation to all candidates.
Yes.
Anybody in the political realm.
I thought you meant to our New Year's party.
New Year's party. No, like, we'll never disclose the location of the New Year's party. You might read about us in Guelph Today, though. It's like,
the police blotter. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's
when guy we, runs away.
When
other
up.
Guy runs the other way.
Yeah. When we set the dumpster downtown on fire again. Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Allegedly. Stay tuned to Open Sources all the time. You can find us at opensourcesguelph.com. Connect with us at Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And, of course, you can go to the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play to find this and other past episodes of the show. You can connect with me at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And now for some more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we will be back with you in the IRL next week. And until then, well, we will see you next Thursday at 5 p.m. See you then.